Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Good, the Bad, and the Hungy. This is a solo show. It's just me, Fred. There's no Tyler this week. We were going to record together last Friday, and then I messed it up. I had a project for work that had to get done that day, and I did not finish it before the show, so I had to cancel the show and do that work instead. Exciting stuff. Yeah, I just wanted to do a quick news update because we kind of sort of have news, which is very professional wrestling at this point in time. It's just, you know, we are waiting on formal announcements on, well, one big thing, but, you know, several other things too. I'm good at describing things. So yeah, I just felt like we needed to cover some stuff and, you know, Tyler and I should be back this week for a joint show to talk about what happens on Grand Slam, which I hope you're able to listen to this before that show happens, at least the Dynamite portion. Obviously, the big story with AEW is the pending deal that they reportedly have from John Arand from Puck. The info from John is basically a 3-year deal plus a 4-year option, I think, on the side of Warner Brothers Discovery. That's my interpretation. It's roughly going for about $170 million per year. John Arand said that the number that is floating around on wrestling message boards is roughly right. So I guess either the Punch Sports Pagoda or Meltzer's The Board, tilde exclamation point. But yeah, that's the reporting. Apparently streaming and pay-per-view is going to be a separate deal. Now, AEW's content deal is no longer exclusive with Warner Brothers Discovery. And AEW is also reportedly shopping to Fox. Brandon Thurston did some basically a profit loss analysis last December, I believe it was. And he projected that they received about $67.5 million for TV from Warner Brothers Discovery last year. So that is a 250% increase from last year's deal to the one that they have either signed or on the verge of signing, or, you know, it's Schrodinger. Oh, so much Schrodinger's cat stuff here, you know, just like something is happening or maybe it isn't. Just don't look in the box. Otherwise, don't look in the box, you can't tell. So yeah, the 4-year deal AEW signed in 2020, which was should have been their second deal, if one recalls correctly, that was for a total of $175 million. So Thurston, he estimated that in 2023, AEW lost $34 million. So assuming all else is equal, that means that the new deal, once it kicks in, assuming, you know, that the $170 million per year offer or number is correct, that would flip that over to a profit annually of $68.5 million. Additionally, a couple days later, Andrew Zarian reported that AEW pay-per-views are going to stream on Max starting in January 2025, possibly sooner. That's not an exclusive deal. It sounds like that's just going to continue to be pay-per-view. Now, if Max tries to make it part of the Max package, then that will obviously be an attempt to kind of boost what is a struggling streaming service in the era of everybody launch a streaming service and then fail to make money off of it. So that's kind of where we are. So we have like not quite rumors, but, not quite actual news. It's somewhere in between. I guess it still is kind of rumors, but it feels more solid than that. So what does this tell us? Well, first of all, AEW is valued as a television product. There's the grifting doomsayers that largely were, you know, anticipating AEW would die shortly, and they use that to enrich themselves to some extent by building an audience of people that really don't like AEW. And the simple fact that we're seeing from this is that it's successful. You know, it is a successful business. There's things you can point out for sure that are concerning with them. First and foremost, the attendance, which we will get to, though Grand Slam is not as bad as it looked like it was going to be a few weeks ago. But yeah, so they are successful enough to get a good chunk of money from Warner Brothers Discovery, and one presumes from another media company, including Fox. And yeah, I mean, once they do that, they'll be solidly in the black. And, you know, the whole AEW spending too much on talent thing that WWE floated. Just such a funny thing for, like, people to parrot. Like, oh, I love these wrestlers. It's really bad that another company is offering a bunch of money for them. You know, yeah, I mean, the idea of AEW being profitable is a good one, but I'm not even sure it really needs to, frankly. It needs to be profitable. This could just be a Tony Khan pet project. I'm like 10 minutes in and I'm freaking out because I realized I did not mute my phone. So it's like just waiting for someone to, you know, call and ruin this expert recording. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a hypothetical situation. I mean, frankly, for a billionaire, given the net worth of the Khans, assuming, you know, that at no point Papa Khan pulls the plug on it because of wanting to lose money. Like, the loss of a couple million a year for someone with the wealth they have is, you know, absurdly small. So if they're just viewing this as Tony Khan's way of having a fun job, basically, like a hobby for expensive people, I mean, it doesn't matter, frankly. You know, like, we're not talking about this losing, like, $100 mil a year or something. And it would be pretty hard at this point, assuming that TV deal is complete, for that to happen in the next couple of years. And so, of course, being able to have a property that can sign a TV deal like that means AEW has additional value. And, I mean, you know, the thing with the profitability of AEW is it always kind of reminds me of whenever you have, you know, a CBA come up, you know, the labor deal for, you know, a U.S. sports league. There's always these negotiating tactics through the media where, you know, you'll get it leaked and they'll say, oh, 24 baseball teams are losing money annually. Yeah, we, you know, it's just so the MLB is in such a bad financial position. And the reason they do that is because they want to pay their players less. They want more money to go to them. But people keep buying these franchises for hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. And it's kind of like, well, if it's such a unprofitable company, why are people buying in like that? And that's kind of where AEW is. If Tony Khan wanted to sell it for some, you know, reason, even without the TV deal, it's not like he'd, you know, be offloading it at a loss. You know, I honestly believe that someone would pay top dollar, pardon the not quite pun, I guess, since the wrestler, I don't know what I'm doing, y'all. But yeah, I mean, it's a property that has value, and people want in on it. And the downside is that there's going to be people that are like, oh, well, just wait 3 years, and then they'll get canceled, and then they'll die. And I mean, this is just going to be the cycle. You know, there's always going to be these people that want this company to go away because, you know, they didn't want an alternative to WWE. They just wanted WWE to be marginally better. And I guess it is. I mean, it's definitely hot. Let's not kid ourselves. But it's just, it's not a product that really strongly appeals to me. So, yeah, AEW's here. We kind of have a proof of concept that it's, or not even proof of concept. We have proof of, financial proof that it's a viable idea. And they're making good money, and they're going to be around for a while, so that's going to be all right. Some notes on talent. First of all, Miro has requested a release from Fightful. or from Fightful, per Fightful from AEW. Dave Meltzer has also reported that AEW is less confident that Daniel Garcia is going to re-sign as of yesterday. I'm recording this on 9/25, so that would be September 24. And Kevin Owens' deal is reportedly up, and he's reportedly open to talking with AEW. There's two different things here that I want to talk about. One is the, reportedly the stuff that may happen, right? Or almost happen, you know, with, you know, Miro asking out and not getting his way. And additionally, Daniel Garcia's contract status. I mean, they're not really news stories yet, you know, because nothing's really happened. They're speculation stories. I suppose it's actually proper news that Miro asked for a release, but, first of all, with Miro, he went through a divorce. I wouldn't say it's public, both parties involved were public figures. People don't have the easiest time being divorced. It's not a pleasant process most of the time. I don't know how much. I'm not saying blame. That's obviously not what I'm trying to do here or trying to talk about. How much reading of what his future is would show. Does he want out because he just wants to, you know, get away from wrestling for a while? As we got a run-in by the La Hija de Hungikat. Get over here. Where are you at?
There you are.
All right. She comes in and she hears me talking and she wants the attention. And then I pick her up and she's unhappy with that. But anyways, there's currently a cat in my arms getting rubs while it thinks about trying to leave. So is Miro just wanting away from wrestling and just wanting to, you know, go home? Or is he wanting to leave? I think in AEW he found that he had a ceiling. Fair or not, I just kind of feel like it's a situation where he wasn't going to be able to go much higher. He was kind of just stuck being, you know, around the TNT championship level. I mean, I could have seen him with like an international or continental level, you know, a secondary belt. Okay, all right, hit the bricks, cap. Now I'm holding the thing and it starts sticking the claws out. You know, you can go now. But yeah, with Miro, maybe he just wants a change of scenery. And I think the thing with him is, you know, every wrestler more or less thinks that they need to be pushed more. That's every part of the card. You know, you can go from the very tippy top of a company to the very bottom. And they all think that they should be booked better and stronger and more. I think Miro, if this is Miro thinks it'll be better in WWE, I don't know if that'll be the case. And the reason I say that is you look at Andrade. Andrade was unhappy with being in a similar position to where Miro has been when Miro has been on TV. Not a world title guy, not a top main eventer, but like, you know, the next step down, a nice upper mid-carder, right? And Andrade wasn't happy with that. So, you know, he went to WWE, and there's various other benefits to going to WWE. I'm sure he's getting paid a nice amount. He's getting to work in the same company as his wife. You know, and these are nice things. But in terms of his push, he's not really getting the push. You know, he's, I think it was like a month in, and he got shifted over to the Speed Show on X, the Everything app, the site we all love. And if you give me a moment here to pull up his statistics on the old cage match, let's pull up, the fun thing is always Fred pulling up, clicking on things and muttering to himself as he pulls up information. Yeah, so Andrade made the jump, made the surprise appearance in the Rumble, and then didn't wrestle for two more months. It was a WrestleMania match. Let's not spin in the face of that. But, you know, I mean, he didn't qualify for Money in the Bank. He did, actually. I misread that. He did qualify in it, but he didn't win it. His highlight since then has been basically a 50-50 feud with Carmelo Hayes. And a run as the WWE Speed Champion on Twitter. And then he lost on TV last Friday against LA Knight in a challenge for the U.S. belt. I don't know. It's not exactly like he's a top-of-the-card guy right now. You know, I mean, it's just a situation where I would imagine that Miro would get slotted in a very similar situation, a very similar spot. That Miro would go into the company and get put right where Andrade is. And, you know, maybe he would just be happier in WWE. Maybe Andrade's just happier in WWE. It's possible. It is wild to me just how much people in AEW are given the latitude to, you know, be given the opportunity to, or be pitched stuff, I should say, I guess, and turn it down and just, you know, like, not have to show up to work or not have to do anything. I think that's really fascinating. It's a very un-WWE way of doing things, and I think it's very unlike anything else in the wrestling industry in the past couple of decades. So, like, Miro, one presumes, is still under contract. I mean, obviously, he's asking for a release, so why wouldn't he be? And he's just getting paid to not wrestle and not appear on TV. And he's been doing that for a long time. Am I going back to Cage Match? Why, yes, I am. I'm going to go take a look at a good old Miro. And I mean, his last match was, last December when he beat Andrade at the World's End pay-per-view. So that's almost exactly 9 months since his last televised appearance. And it's just been, you know. Now, I know that they did the story where he and CJ Perry reunited on screen. And that's obviously an issue, given their marital status change. But still, it's just, you know, fascinating. Also, note is that the next previous match Miro had was a win over Daniel Garcia. So I can only conclude that we need to keep an eye on Action Andretti, since he was the one prior to that. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I do wonder just how much of it is he thinks that it would make him happier and a WWE change, jump, I should say, and what the reality of that would be. I mean, if he were to get pushed there, obviously great for him. And he's a guy that I've always wondered why he didn't get more of a push. I think the answer is mid-teens WWE was ran by a declining booker. But now with Daniel Garcia, you know, he had the big storyline with MJF and lost the match, but then got his revenge afterwards and kind of, if not won the feud, was positioned as, you know, strong coming out of it. And now there's the report that he's possibly headed out, you know. And this is a situation where we won't know until he signed and shows up on AEW TV or, you know, WWE TV and is like, I'm here. I'm happy to be here. And I think he's a guy with a lot of potential. I see people knock him as not having charisma, which I think is kind of odd because I think he has charisma in the ring, and I think he's a very good promo, actually, quite good. He's not like a larger than life figure. I would have to agree with that, but I don't think that makes you not charismatic. You know, there's different ways to be charismatic. I think like he got very over in AEW this year. You know, going back to the Continental Classic, I think he had great performances and has shown himself to be a high level performer. And, you know, we get him, you know, I think if he comes back, he'll eventually, and I mean, by eventually, I mean, in a year or so, probably be knocking on the door in the main event scene. You know, I mean, one could argue he already kind of is, but I think he'll be treated as a major figure. WWE, again, I think WWE is such a different company that it's hard to say. Now, I'm not exactly following it closely, but, you know, you know, I just, off my impressions of WWE, and I have watched like most of their acclaimed matches from this year, The idea that he'd waltz in and be like a top of the card guy right away is just doesn't feel right. You know, I wouldn't imagine that he'd probably get stuck in the mid card or maybe at the top of NXT and be one of those like a Carmelo Hayes who, you know, at least his next immediate step would just be like the mid card quagmire of the main roster. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of stories going on with AEW that are very, you know, tell me when something actually happens. And these are kind of that. Now, the other contract that I think is worth discussing is the status of Kevin Owens. He's obviously been in WWE for a long time. I want to say almost 10 years, maybe including NXT, it is 10 years. And in that time, he's never been a true main eventer. He's touched, like, he's been in main events, you know. He's held a world championship of some sort, you know, before, and he's over. And I think he's still a good performer. People talk about a physical decline. I think it's, you know, he's a walk and brawl guy now, you know. I mean, you see people, you know, with that style be able to wrestle till they're very old, you know. It doesn't matter if your knees hurt, if you're just walking and brawling. We're not talking a 450 here, you know. And so, you know, I've seen people push back on the idea of him coming to AEW because they think that it wouldn't be worth the resources. And frankly, as I, you know, I'm kind of rounding back to my conversation about AEW's TV contracts. One, it's not my money. And two, you know, if this is, you know, if the approach that the cons want to take with AEW is it's okay if it loses 10 or $20 million a year, then who cares? Now, I think a more pertinent, from my perspective, criticism or concern is what if Kevin Owens comes in and takes a spot from someone like Daniel Garcia, assuming he resigns, or blocks someone else from being able to rise up the card? I think that's a fair concern, but at the same time, I think, you know, we need to consider that it's not exactly a one-to-one substitution. If Kevin Owens goes to AEW, I think the upside is that we get good performances. What we would get is a guy that is established. Now, you could argue that he's established at a certain level. I think the question in response to that would be, would the AEW fan base be willing to allow him to be elevated? And if, you know, AEW wanted to push him as a true main eventer. And I think that, you know, at least 2 years ago in 2022, they would unquestionably be open to that. 2024, I mean, the fan base has changed. That's obviously, I think, part of the issue with attendance and all that. I think he'd still be able to get over more, increase his overness. And I mean, if you've got a 40-year-old over main eventer, then what you've got is a over main eventer. I mean, people are wrestling longer than they ever have before. He is 40. Like I just said, he, you know, he is a guy with a style that can be converted over to something that, you know, allows him to work around loss of physical ability. Now, you know, when I talk about guys that look like they shouldn't be wrestling, what I think of is like Matt Hardy, you know, at the end of last year, where it looked like he was just in physical discomfort to walk to the ring, you know. Like at that point, it's, you know, like when you lose that much of your fastball, then that's a major concern. That's like a these guys shouldn't be on TV kind of thing, you know. Unless you're willing to do the full smoke and mirrors thing. And, you know, I think that's such a time investment that that's a valid concern. You know, I just didn't see where doing what it would take to make the Hardys a successful TV act in 2024 made sense at AEW size. TNA is a different matter. They're easier to slide into there and get over. So, I mean, I think Kevin Owens has a lot more in the tank. I think he's got a lot of ability. And the thing that actually excites me the most about the thought of Kevin Owens joining AEW is the freedom on the mic. I think he's shown himself regularly over his career to be a guy that is very witty and smart on the microphone, and just his, you know, ad-libbing in the ring is always entertaining, I think. So I just think he'd be a good fit, you know. And I don't think the concern, you know, what about a younger guy is so much there, because if he's over and like a successful main eventer, then who cares, you know, first of all. And secondly, you know, assuming, you know, if Daniel Garcia is gone, especially, like, I don't really know that he's going to be blocking anyone. It's not like a one for one trade. So I think that it'd be worth kicking the tires, you know, on Kevin Owens as a possible roster member. But we'll see how the contract situation plays out. I wouldn't be shocked if he stays with the WWE. You know, he obviously would be getting paid well. But, you know, and, you know, you could always point to, well, he's friends with the Young Bucks, assuming that hasn't changed. Because, you know, it does change. That's not a knock on anyone. It's just a matter-of-fact statement. I mean, I think he'd be great, obviously. I think he'd be a good addition. I don't really have those concerns about, well, what if, you know, what if, I mean, are we really going to freak out about, like, Action Andretti being left to the curtain because Kevin Owens came in? I mean, you know, I do think it's important to keep, you know, a wrestling company does have to keep fresh talent coming in, but part of that equation, not all of it, mind you, but part of it can be signing established guys and giving them a new home and a new atmosphere. I mean, Christian Cage and Adam Copeland have both overachieved. Chris Jericho has been a key figure on the roster, though I think that it's easy to say that, depending on how you come down on it, he's very much showing age. I think that the, you know, you bounce kind of now at this point with Chris Jericho between being very not good, like the reportedly the Anniversario match with Mystico. To being able to have a good match, but not being the best worker in it. Like that Orange Cassidy Dynamite match a couple weeks ago. I actually like that match a lot, but I mean, facts are facts. Orange Cassidy was probably the superior worker in it, if you're being fair. So, I don't know. I mean, those are just my rambling thoughts on the situation. Let's see. Now, here is a note from the Observer last week, which I just thought was very interesting. And I'll use this to segue to talk into the dreaded attendance stuff. For the poster, I don't know if this was an actual poster or just a, you know, the graphic they put on their social media, but let's just go with poster. It's effectively the same thing. But for the September 12th Dayton collision, which taped on September 12th, aired on the 14th. Its poster featured Adam Page, Shawn Moxley, Brian Danielson, Chris Jericho, Willow Nightingale, Thunder Rosa, Penta, Phoenix, and Pac. And none of them were on that show. Meltzer brought this up in the Observer newsletter. Read about it in there, how that's a bad move. And it is a bad move. I mean, there's no argument from me regarding that. But, you know, I think that their ticket issues extend beyond posters maybe not reflecting he's actually on the shows, but it just seems like a tremendous cell phone to do this, to have a poster, even in like the modern, you know, card subject to change thing. You know, AEW had positioned itself as the company that tells you the truth about what you're going to see. And to put out a poster that features 12 people and none of them are on your show that night that the poster is for is pretty atrocious. So I am segueing into Grand Slam ticket sales. Now, AEW ticket sales for other Dynamites and collisions are generally putrid. They still are. It's been a long time concern now. It is odd to me that their pay-per-view buys continue to be strong, that their TV ratings continue to be good. And, you know, you can talk about how their decline is outpacing the decline in cable subscribers, and that's a fair point to be concerned about. But they're still top three, top five every night, you know, if not number one. And, I mean, that's valuable. And, you know, the people that want to degrade it will say that it they're not at the ratings of Raw, and that's okay. It's okay for a company to be number two in the U.S. We don't have to do the Monday Night Wars over and over again. You know, that's what killed WCW, really, was the over-pursuit of, you know, trying to grab just rating wins at the expense of long-term planning. So, but I, you know, if I was Tony Khan, I'd be very concerned about ticket sales, because I think it reflects a genuine loss of momentum with the company over the past year and a half or so. You know, I will always point to the CM Punk incident that, you know, really did harm to the company and really kind of put an end to the good times are here vibes. And then once you had WWE get hot, you know, when your company is number two and it is feels notably not hot, and the number one company is hot and drawing 10 to 15,000 on a weekly basis, then that just exaggerates the issue for the number two company. And, you know, we keep running these large arenas. You know, again, I was at the September 11th Lexington, Kentucky Dynamite, and they used Rupp Arena, which is a big NBA-sized basketball arena of 20,000 people, 22,000. And they put, I think it was 3,000 in there, if I recall correctly. And it just, I mean, I thought the crowd was pretty into the show. I don't think that was a bad crowd, but the size disparity, I think, reflects. I haven't gone back and watched that Dynamite on TV yet. I should have, but, you know, busy. But the idea that you're in this massive basketball arena and you're filling a seventh of it, you know, that's rough. That's a rough image. And I just think it'd be, you know, my thing is always with AEW, with booking on the weekly shows, these big buildings, is you're a company that is primarily getting your money from TV. To me, and this has always been, I think, how I've looked at it, is it's more important for your show to look good on TV than for you to max out tickets sold. So I am convinced that it would be better if for Dynamites and Collisions and Rampages, or, you know, once, assuming that everyone's right, the Rampage is getting replaced with Shockwave, that show, if they, you know, I've always thought it was important to make those shows look good on TV. And I think that would help with your problem is if you are in a building that seats 2,000, it's a sellout, and you've got the 2,000 fans that are into your product, that looks so much better than being in a building that seats 22,000, but you put 3,000 in there, and it just does not feel like a rowdy crowd. It feels like people that are into the show, but they're, like, spaced out. You know, when you start putting, like, COVID distance restrictions on your crowd, which I'm not saying they did that, but I, you know, if you, they were to try to fill Rupp fully and, like, you know, didn't close off sections, if they tried to seat people, you know, in there, there'd be like 20 feet between people, you know, that'd be insane to look at. And so you got the camera tight on the hard cam side on towards the people that are there. And then, you know, you've got the every other part of the arena just dark and empty, you know, and like your fans are looking at that from one side of the ring to the other. It's just, I don't know, I just think you can do the vibes better. I think, and I said this before, I think on this show, but I'll repeat myself, you know, I think it'd be better for them if they it'd be good for them if they just took Collision off the road and for 3 months just taped it in Daly's place. You know, I'm not saying you necessarily have to do the full, like, WCW Disney tapings mid-90s thing. You have to, like, do the continuity dance and everything. Try to keep everything straight. But, I mean, at least you'd be able to get a good crowd in Daly's place. It's a different looking venue. It's not Basketball Arena number 34, you know. Just swapping in, like, where the, you know, the light boards for ads are or whatever. They need to do some stuff like that. I still think it was incredibly cool when they had the episodes, I think, of Dynamite early on. They were on the Jericho Cruise. You know, they need to go back to finding unique arenas. If you know, and if that costs you, I don't know, $50,000, $20,000 a show, even that much, you're making so much money off of TV. If I can't imagine it would hurt you if you were just like, we're in smaller buildings, but they're filled with our true fans that are into the show. Meltzer's always had an argument that, well, if you're in the smaller building in a city, then you look at, you're looked at as a minor league company. But I mean, who cares? You know, there's so many other things with this company that make it major league, and it's, you know, starts with dollars and ends with cents. You know, you got the money going around, you got the TV money and all this stuff, you know. And if, you know, I think people that look at it as a minor league wrestling product are at this point just kind of decided that AEW bad, you know, Fed good. You know, with Grand Slam, you know, 2021, they put more than 20,000 people, 20,177 people in that building, the Arthur Ashe Stadium. 2022, that dropped down to 13,800. And then 2023, stayed at 11,263. So, I mean, I was not shocked by a drop off from year one to two. And then two to three was, you know, close. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was down, but it was, you know, not a concerning one, I think. This year, WrestleTix tweeted out, was this today? This was today, this morning, that they have 7,461 tickets distributed. That's, I mean, this is a good number for a Dynamite at this point, but I think for an Arthur Ashe, you know, losing another, what, 50% year over year, I mean, yeah, AEW's problem has just been, I think, or one of their problems has been a lack of hot acts and storylines. Now, I think the Hangman's Swerve stuff was fantastic, and I think they both came off like major stars. And I feel like this Mox stuff feels like a breath of fresh air and is very interesting. But who else? I mean, Ospreay is over, but I think they've, you know, the way they pushed him, and you could make the argument for it against, you know, like giving him a Superman push coming into the company, and same with Okada, is that, you know, I think that they don't feel like major stars. They feel like stars, let's be clear. And I do think Ospreay feels like a major star, but I hope you understand what I'm trying to say poorly, that it's a, this guy could be more and yet isn't kind of situation. And especially Okada. Okada feels like he's been reduced to a comedy figure, and that's just kind of an insane way to use your big money free agent acquisition. I don't know. And I think that's more or less the news I wanted to touch on for this week's show. Just a quick little catch up. Before we get Grand Slam Part 1 tonight. Wrestle Dream is coming up shortly. That's 2.5 weeks at this point. October 12th. Grand Slam. We should do a preview of the card. Just real quick. Reportedly, per Wikipedia, this is what we got. Kyle Fletcher and Ospreay against the Young Bucks. I think we'll probably see a turn there. I don't know. With Ospreay and the Callis family. That'll probably be a good story, but I mean, I don't know if that's really going to be a, you know, ass in seats kind of thing, right? Roderick Strong versus Hook for the 1999 WWF Hardcore title. Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness, if it happens. What a weird way to sell a match. This should be a meaningful match, and their build to it has been, we don't know if Bryan Danielson will show up. I don't know, man. That just doesn't feel like a successful thing. And Yuka Sakazaki challenging Mariah May. Forgot to mention that. And then Darby putting his world championship match up on the line against Jon Moxley on the same card that the guy that would be out, that Darby was supposed to challenge, is wrestling, one presumes. What the hell? That's such a dumb story. It's gonna make Darby look like a stupid idiot. I can't get on board with that. And then on Collision, We got a Jack Perry open challenge for the TNT Championship. We've got a Saraya against Jamie Hayter and a Saraya's rules where Saraya can basically do whatever she wants with no DQs. And the winner receives an autographed copy of Saraya's autobiography, which that's a funny bit. I'll give him that. We got a three-way match, Hologram, The Beast, Mortos, and Realistico. He's clearly going to be taking the fall, taking the pinfall, Realistico. One of these guys is not like the other. Sammy Guevara, Kazuchika Okada eliminator match, where your options are Guevara wins and gets a title match from the 5th anniversary show, or Okada wins and Guevara can never challenge him again. And we know that Okada is just doing weekly challenges all the time. I can't imagine having Guevara win this match. I listened to Joe Lanza scream about it last week, how stupid that would be, and I couldn't come up with a good argument for having Guevara take the win on this match to set up the 5th anniversary show. So hopefully they don't do that. I guess we'll see. Then finally on Collision, we've got the Conglomeration against the Learning Tree. I think that'll be sneakily good. And then Jeff Jarrett against Hangman Page in the Lumberjack strap match, which I think could actually be fantastic. Jarrett has been so good in this babyface role as the veteran babyface guy that loses. And he has had so much fire, and it's been awesome. And I'm really excited for, I can't believe I'm saying this, a Jeff Jarrett match in the year of our Lord 2024. Unassigned, just a match that may be on either show, who's to say, is Pac and Claudio and Sad Wheeler Yuta putting their AEW World Trios Championship on the line. Wouldn't be shocked if it's Private Party and Commander, and then it's like a semi-squash or maybe even an outright squash, because these cards are looking kind of full. I don't know, that just doesn't put a lot of wind in my sails as a thing, but hey, you can't win them all. Now I can say that I was a guest on Mr. Warren Hayes live show. Boy, don't ask me when. I'm so good at this. I don't know why anyone ever invites me to anything or puts up with my presence at all. I think it was a week ago. I think it was on the 18th. I just hijacked a show and we talked about who would have been a better option to be the Marine and the Marine 3 instead of the Miz back in 2012 or whatever year that was. So I think that's about enough rambling for me. Grand Slam is tonight. I hope you all enjoy the show. I hope it's a good one. Tyler and I hope to discuss the show this Friday, probably. But we'll see how it goes. And yeah, that's it. I've somehow wasted 43 minutes on this. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to discuss anything, feel free to join us in the Voices of Wrestling Discord. You can do so by clicking wherever the hell the link is, and then finding our The Good, the Bad, and the Hungry show channel. You can also email us at goodbadhungie, H-U-N-G-E-E, at gmail. Am I giving the right email? I've had a run here on the show of giving bad links, and I am atrocious, basically, at all things. Yeah, I didn't even give you the right email address. God almighty. It's HungiePod, HungiePod at gmail.com. I am very tired and very bad at this. But feel free to join us or contact us that way. Leave Twitter. Just delete your account. It's okay. Just let it go. Let it die. It's not what it once was and never will be again. That's it. Everyone have a great day. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.